This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents...
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Cowhide. Yes, we have that story for you. Come right over. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable? The manuscript is on this shelf. Here it is. Cowhide. The very intriguing story of a suitcase that was packed with murder. Let's look at it under the reading lamp. It was early afternoon, and the customer's room in the brokerage offices on the second floor of a midtown office building was crowded, as usual. Harold Phillips, a middle-aged clerk, crossed the large room, nervously adjusting his tie, and stopped outside the office of Mark Baldwin, the manager.
Come in.
Excuse me, Mr. Baldwin.
Oh, Phillips. Come in, please.
Thank you, sir. You sent for me, Mr. Baldwin.
Come here, Phillips.
I hope nothing is wrong, sir. My books...
Sit down.
I've always been very careful, sir. I never let a page go without checking and rechecking.
Phillips, you've been with this company for 30 years.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever thought of leaving us?
Leaving? Why, no, sir.
Not once in 30 years?
Well, I... Please don't hold it against me, sir. There were times when I thought I might do better somewhere else, but...
Yes?
I realized that I couldn't, and I stopped thinking about it. It's been 15 years since I...
Good for you, Phillips. I guess we can trust you.
What?
Open that suitcase on my desk.
Yes, sir. Good heavens! Securities!
$500,000 worth. And they're all negotiable.
But I... Well, look here, Mr. Baldwin, if you're accusing me...
What are you talking about?
If you're accusing me of having packed that suitcase...
Phillips...
You don't know me, sir. You've been the manager of this office less than a year. But I have a record of excellent service. You can ask the gentleman in the main office if you want to.
Phillips, don't be an idiot. I'm not accusing you.
But the suitcase...
It's going to our Los Angeles office.
Oh.
You're going to take it there.
I?
Naturally. You're the only one I can trust with it.
But such transfers are usually made by...
I know all about it. Now, you'll leave tonight on the 9 o'clock train. I've reserved a drawing room for you.
Yes, sir.
You'll be careful, of course. You won't leave that drawing room for 1 minute.
But, Mr. Baldwin...
I said not for 1 minute, Phillips. And as for your meals...
I'll make arrangements.
That's the idea. One more thing, Phillips.
Yes, sir.
You are not to discuss this matter with anyone. Not with anyone, including the members of your own family.
But Los Angeles, Mr. Baldwin... How can I explain that to Doris, my daughter?
Don't.
But I'm going away for a long time, for 2 weeks, perhaps.
Think up a good excuse. Only you, I, and the manager of the Los Angeles office know about this transfer. We want nothing to happen to that suitcase or to you.
Yes, sir.
In other words, Mr. Phillips, we don't want you killed.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate your consideration.
Yes.
I'll go home and pack after closing time, of course. And will I take the suitcase home with me?
No, you stop back here on your way to the train and I'll give it to you.
Would 8 o'clock be all right?
Fine. But be prompt. The train leaves at 9.
Well, I won't be late. And now, Mr. Baldwin, if I may say so...
Yes?
Thank you for your confidence in me.
Dad?
Oh, in here, Doris, my room.
Huh. Did you eat?
Scrambled eggs.
You would. Every time I come home late from work, you... Say, what's going on here?
Just packing.
walking out on me?
Only for a little while, dear.
What?
Yes, Mr. Baldwin has given me a 2 weeks vacation.
Oh?
With pay, of course. Oh, now, don't stare at me like a frightened little girl.
Dad, where are you going?
Aunt Martha's. That sister of mine has been after me to pay her a visit.
But you had 2 weeks vacation not 3 months ago.
Well, Mr. Baldwin wants me to have another one.
Why?
As a bonus for my good work. 30 years on one job.
Why not cash?
He's only the manager of a branch office, dear. Now, stop worrying. You'll get wrinkles.
Dad, he's not sending you away because of something that happened this afternoon.
What do you mean, Doris?
You didn't get sick.
Oh, no.
Those headaches you used to complain about.
Oh, I haven't had one since...
Well, I know you've been seeing the doctor.
Oh?
I didn't say anything because you didn't. I thought if you didn't want me to know...
There's no keeping a secret from you, is there? Well, everything's all right. My blood pressure's down.
Yes, but this afternoon...
A mild attack, nothing serious. But Mr. Baldwin happened to notice it, and, well, he's very fond of me and the kind who appreciates loyalty.
Oh, Dad, why won't you give up your job?
Give it up? Well, what would I do?
Must you do anything? I'm making enough for both of us.
Nonsense, dear. You're going to be married someday.
Oh, sure.
Don't you think so?
First, I've got to find a man.
What's wrong with the men you know now?
Oh, why talk about them? Listen, Dad, you've been working long enough.
And I'm going to keep right on working. Goodbye, dear. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Oh, no, you don't. I'm going to station with you.
Haven't you a date for tonight?
I'll call it off.
You'll do nothing of the kind.
Dad.
Why, I'm sorry, dear. I didn't mean to lose my temper.
It's all right.
Treating me like an invalid.
I just... wanted to see you off, Dad.
It isn't necessary. You've got a date. Keep it. Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye.
Take good care of yourself.
Hello.
I'd like to see Mr. Kenneth Badger.
I'm Ken Badger.
Are you the private detective?
Well, so they say.
But, all right, take a look at this newspaper.
For free?
Read it.
Now, look, miss,
Read the headline, please.
You've got a way about you. Okay. Brokerage clerk disappears with $500,000. Harold Phillips for 30 years a clerk in the brokerage offices of... How am I doing, kid? Do I pass the literacy test?
My name's Doris.
My favorite name.
Harold Phillips is my father.
Mm-hmm. Well, what'd you say?
Mr. Badger, I'm desperate.
A good-looking girl like you.
My father didn't steal those securities.
What a shame.
I know he didn't. And you're going to find him and prove that he didn't.
I am?
Yes. Will you?
Now listen, honey. There comes a time in every man's life when he's got to say no. This is my time.
But you don't know my father.
Is that bad?
He's not a thief. He's the most honest, the most conscientious.
Oh, somebody told you about my weakness, huh?
Well, you'd only try to understand. Dad's been with that company for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
handling money and securities every day. If he wanted to steal, he could have done it in dribs and drabs, picking the books.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to wait until yesterday and take $500,000 at one time.
Maybe he didn't get the idea until yesterday.
Oh, please, mister.
Oh, cut it out, will you?
I guess.
Will you please cut it out? I'm not going to be carried away by a flood.
All right. All right, Mr. Magic. You don't have to take this case, but I'll tell you what I really think.
Over a cup of coffee?
When I came home from work last night, Dad was packing.
There's a nice little restaurant down the street. Come on.
Listen to me. Dad said that Mr. Baldwin, the manager of his office, had given him a 2 weeks vacation. He was going to spend it with Aunt Martha at her place in the country. I phoned Aunt Martha this morning.
Dad wasn't there.
No. Mr. Badger, my father wouldn't lie to me. Something happened to him last night.
What do you think?
He might have been kidnapped or murdered.
What?
Mr. Baldwin's got those securities. That's why he told Dad he could go away. And then last night his dad was going to the station.
Wait a minute. Why did you phone Aunt Martha this morning?
Dad hasn't been feeling well. I was worried.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a break, baby.
Oh?
Only because I like you. But there's one condition.
What?
From now on, it's Ken.
Yes, Ken.
Okay, Doris. I'm going down to the brokerage office to see what Mr. Baldwin looks like.
Oh, I'm going with you.
You are?
I am.
That's what I said. You are. Now, you stay here, Doris.
Oh, but Ken,
here, baby. I want Baldwin all to myself.
Well,
I've got a special interest in international pigs, so so long, honey. I'll see you later.
Come in.
What?
Badger, what are you doing here?
Inspector Hopkins, my old friend.
I asked you a question, Ken.
I've been retained.
By who?
Doris Phillips, the daughter of... Well, Inspector, don't I get a knockdown?
If it'll make you happy.
I'm talking about those two nice people over there.
Walter Conrad, the assistant manager, and that's Joyce Lipton, Mark Baldwin's private secretary.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Joyce Lipton. Say, haven't we,
Have we?
Oh, I'm pretty sure of it, but, where?
Now, see here, Ken, I'm conducting an investigation.
Oh, you're a hard man, Inspector. All the pretty women...
State your business and get out of here.
Well, since you put it so politely, I'm looking for Mark Baldwin.
That's good, so am I.
What?
Anything else, Ken?
Now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Are you saying that Baldwin and Phillips...
That seems to be his pet theory, Mr. Badger.
Shut up, Conrad. All you have to do is answer questions.
And all you have to do, Inspector, is to ask them. Intelligent ones.
You're looking for trouble, aren't you?
Just because Mr. Baldwin didn't come to the office today doesn't mean that he and Phillips took those securities.
He didn't show up at his hotel all night, either.
That can mean anything, Inspector.
Well, somehow do you do, huh? Mr. Conrad.
Are you butting in, Ken?
Just for a couple of questions, Inspector. Mr. Conrad... When was the last time you saw Mark Baldwin?
When I left the office yesterday, about 6 o'clock.
And you, Joyce?
7 o'clock. Mr. Baldwin wanted me to stay for some last-minute dictation. Dictation, Mr. Baxter.
Oh, yes. Anybody see him after that?
We've been all through that, Ken.
My client wants to know, Inspector.
Well, I don't know who saw him afterwards. I left at 7 o'clock.
I don't suppose you realize how ridiculous this is, do you?
Now, see here, Conrad.
All these questions about Mr. Baldwin... If he had a part in this robbery, do you think he'd be fool enough to disappear?
It's been done before, mister.
Mark Baldwin wouldn't take $500,000 to share with a clerk.
Is that your opinion, too, Miss Lipton?
I have no opinion. And I just can't believe that either Mr. Baldwin or Mr. Phillips could have done such a thing.
Yes. Now, Mr. Conrad, let me tell you something about who takes and who shares.
Hey, Inspector.
Ken, if you don't stop butting
in... Take a look over here. I think you'll be my friend again.
Huh? What did you find?
I always travel with my nose close to the carpet. My dog taught me that trick.
Listen, Ken.
Down here.
Huh?
Tell me what they look like to you.
Bloodstains that somebody tried to wash out.
It's funny, that's what they look like to me.
They form a line from the desk to the coat closet.
What do we do now, Inspector?
I'll let you know. Yeah. If there's one thing I didn't expect.
Would you say he's dead?
I don't say anything when the coroner gets here, Ken. Mr. Conrad, who's that man? Baldwin or Phillips?
That's Mr. Baldwin.
No, no, Doris, you can't come in.
I've got to know what's going on, Ken.
I told you, I'll tell you later.
Why did all those men come here, those policemen and the men with the cameras?
They're holding a convention.
Somebody's been murdered.
Oh, my Lord.
Dad?
No. Mr. Baldwin.
Oh, no.
Oh, all right, all right. I'm still working for you.
Oh, Ken, you know what they're going to think.
Just keep looking at those quotations. I'll be out as soon as I can.
Stabbed in the back, huh? Died between 8 and 9 o'clock last night.
What's that, Inspector?
You still here?
Between 8 and 9 o'clock last night, huh?
That's about when Baldwin was murdered, according to the coroner.
Holy smoke, and the old guy's innocent.
Sure.
I'm not kidding. Phillips didn't do it. His daughter told me he took an 8 o'clock train last night.
Yeah? Where was he going?
To the country to see his sister, Aunt Martha.
So it's Aunt Martha, huh?
Oh, all right, so I'm gone for the girl, but...
Did he get there?
Did he... Oh. All right, you win, Inspector. You've got logic.
Yeah, stick around, sonny boy. I'm giving free lessons today. Now, Mr. Conrad, you get first crack at the truth.
I've told you everything I know, Inspector.
I haven't asked you everything. What was kept in that safe?
Oh, bonds, securities, cash.
Who knew the combination?
Mr. Baldwin, myself.
You too, Miss Lipton?
I never went to that safe unless it was open.
Did you know the combination?
Of course not.
Look here, Inspector. What are you driving at?
Somebody gave Harold Phillips those securities.
Somebody did nothing of the kind. Phillips knew the combination of that safe.
A clerk?
He was our oldest employee. We felt that we could trust him. Whoever dreamed that he would...
I'll take that, Miss Lipton.
But it might be company business, Inspector.
Yeah, it might. Hello? Yeah, Hopkins talking. You don't say. Good. Perfect. Tell Detective Riley to hop on a plane right away. Yeah, I know he's with homicide. We want Phillips for murder. Well, they picked him up in Chicago on a train with two suitcases. What's the matter, kid? No comments from Lovelorn? What about the security? That's the next episode, tomorrow morning at police headquarters.
What do you mean?
The suitcase wasn't loaded with clothing and personal effects, and it wasn't loaded with securities either.
Huh?
It was loaded, Ken, with newspapers. All right, Phillips, let's forget everything you've told me so far.
But I've told you the truth, Inspector Hopkins.
Yeah. Well, now tell me a few lies.
I don't know what to say to you. I didn't kill Mr. Baldwin. I didn't steal any security.
You didn't load that suitcase with newspapers either.
No.
Baldwin did that, huh? And then he stabbed himself in the back.
He was alive when I left him at 8:20 the other night.
He wasn't in the closet?
I told you he was alive, sitting at his desk.
Where are the securities, Phillips?
I thought they were in the suitcase.
Now
listen to me, Inspector. Mr. Baldwin told me to deliver the securities to our Los Angeles office. He didn't want anyone to know.
Where are they, mister?
He wouldn't even let me tell Doris where I was going. I had to lie to her about a 2-week vacation that I was going to spend with my sister Martha.
Phillips,
I've got to believe me, Inspector. I saw the securities in the afternoon. They were in that suitcase. But Mr. Baldwin wouldn't let me take it home.
Yeah.
I met him that evening at the office, his office, and he handed me the suitcase, locked, and train ticket.
One way?
Yes, he said the manager of the Los Angeles office would give me a return ticket. You've got to believe me, Inspector.
Come on, Phillips. Let's start from the beginning. Now, you knew Baldwin was working late, so you went to the office and killed him.
No.
You opened the safe and took the securities. Then you took a train for Chicago with a load of newspapers.
No, I didn't.
Just in case you got picked up. You figured we might take you for a poor sucker who was being framed.
That's exactly what I am, but you won't...
Hold everything, Phillips. Yeah? Uh-huh. What did he say? Yeah, that's what I thought. All right, Dempsey. Phillips, we've just had Los Angeles on the phone.
Oh, well, then the manager out there has told you that...
He didn't tell me. He spoke to my assistant.
Well, what's the difference? You know I'm innocent. He was expecting no security.
No, mister.
What? Well, but there must be some mistake. Mr. Baldwin told me...
Sit down, Phillips. Have a cigarette. And then talk.
Ken?
Coffee with tears, hon?
Bad combination.
Did you get Inspector Hopkins?
Yes, Doris.
When can I see my father?
Will you promise not to turn on the faucets?
Ken?
You can see him anytime. He's just been booked.
Oh.
Murder in the first degree. Without a confession.
He didn't do it, Ken.
The inspector also told me a lot of other things.
He didn't do it,
things
Ken.
Things your father told him. Doris.
Yes?
Your father knew he wasn't going to Aunt Martha's.
What?
He was going to California on orders from Baldwin.
But he told me he...
What time is it?
4:15. But Ken...
Come on, let's get out of here.
Are we going down to the prison?
Nope. We're going to find out more about a certain security transfer. And about a certain gal with red hair and blue eyes in a way that's very tantalizing.
No, Mr. Badger, I've never been there.
Well, then, how about
or
the...
Or there either.
Okay, Joyce. Can't blame a guy for trying, can you?
I can.
North wind blew me right out of my... Say... Have you heard the latest about Phillips?
No.
He's going to be indicted for murder.
Oh, for pity's sake, then he is guilty after all.
Only indicted, baby. He's still got an alibi.
Really?
He claims Baldwin sent him to Los Angeles for those securities.
Los Angeles? You mean our office out there?
Mm-hmm. A sort of transfer.
Who told you about it?
My bosom pal and crony, Inspector Hopkins.
Oh.
If a transfer had been arranged, would there be a record of it?
Why, of course.
In the form of correspondence?
Possibly.
Well, now we're talking the same language. Where's the correspondence?
It's in those files.
I mean the letters he dictated when he asked you to stay late.
Oh, they're in my stenographic notebook.
Still there, huh?
I didn't type them up.
Uh-oh. That's not being a good secretary, Joyce.
Why don't you mind your own business?
Okay, I'll just take the book and let Inspector Hopkins mind his business.
Well, I was going to type them up, but Mr. Baldwin told me to go home. And then the next morning... Well, I don't have to tell you about the next morning, do I?
Aren't you glad?
There's nothing in that book about transfer of security.
Nothing?
What do you mean?
Well, it might be in code. You know, $10,000 a word spelled backwards.
Well, I don't think so, because...
I know. I'll take the book down to police headquarters.
Why?
Well, they've got some of the best typists and code busters in the world.
Oh, Miss Lipton.
Hello, hey. Conrad.
What are you doing in this office?
Just talking to a lady.
You talk to no one but me, understand?
So you've been promoted, huh?
I'm in charge here now, and I don't want snoopers around.
The reason?
This is a private office. If you have any business, the customer's room is open every day from 10 to 3. Now, get out.
Conrad, did you ever get a massage?
You wouldn't dare.
Oh, I would. But why waste it on you?
You hoodlum. Miss Lipton, the next time such characters come in here, I'll...
Well, Ken, what did you find out?
What I'm going to find out, Doris, it counts.
What do you mean?
You go back to your apartment and wait for my call.
And you?
Police headquarters. And wish us luck. Hello.
Ken?
For Pete's sake, Doris, where have you been?
Don't be angry, dear.
I told you to go back to your apartment and wait for my call.
I did, but you didn't call for 3 hours, and then I had an idea.
Where are you now?
In a drugstore.
Oh, that's nice. Tell them to set up one for me, too. A double malted with a...
Ken, you don't understand. This drugstore is in the building my father works in. The brokerage offices are on the second floor.
What got you there?
A terrific idea. Now I need help.
What's the matter?
How soon can you get here?
15 minutes. What's the matter, Doris?
I'll tell you when I see you. But hurry.
All right, kid, you just leave him to me. I'll take care of him.
Don't be rough with him, Ken. He's not young.
Uh-huh. So you went out and got a detective, huh?
What's this about you refusing to answer questions, mister?
I got a right to, ain't I, when they come from her? She's only a civilian, like me.
What's your name?
Joseph. Now, look, officer.
Do you know Harold Phillips?
Sure I do. Seen him lots of times when he was working late in the brokerage office.
Did you see him the night of the murder?
I ain't talking to you, lady.
All right, then you'll talk to me.
Sure I seen him. I took him up in the elevator.
What time?
Now listen, you.
All right. Tell him.
It was 8:15, and I rung him down again at exactly 8:30.
You talk like radio time, pal.
I got it on my mind. Another detective asked me them same questions about an hour ago. Showed him the book.
What book?
That's what I wanted to see, Ken. The book everybody must sign when they come in and go out of an office building after 6 o'clock.
Did you think of that all by yourself?
All of a sudden.
Where's the book, Joseph?
Right here. And that's where Mr. Phillips signed it.
Darling.
Hey, are you talking to me?
Not tonight, Joseph. You go right up and down your elevator. Come on, Doris.
That does it, Ken. That proves Dad's innocent.
And you thought of that all by yourself?
Dad wouldn't have signed that book if he were going to steal or commit murder. He wouldn't have used the elevator.
And I went to school and paid for a license.
What are you talking about?
Just thinking out loud about how good I am. Will you do me one favor?
Oh, you know I will.
Then go home.
What?
And stay there. And don't move until you hear from me.
Well.
Hiya, Cookie. You mind if I come in?
Oh, you have the nicest way of asking.
I didn't mean to push you. An old habit I picked up in the subway.
What do you want?
Well. It's a nice place. You live here alone?
Now, listen, Mr. Badger.
Joyce, when will you learn to call me Ken?
I'll be at the office at 9 o'clock in the morning. Now, if you have anything...
I have. Your stenographic notebook.
Oh. Did the police get anything out of it?
Mm-hmm. A murderer.
Really?
You're pretty cute, baby.
Huh. What did Phillips have to do with my notebook?
Fingerprint?
On my notebook?
You're not working on all cylinders, Cookie. They were your fingerprints.
I'm afraid I don't follow you, Mr. Badger.
You don't have to. I'll follow you.
Why?
Oh, I knew I met you somewhere before. But I don't recognize the gun.
I let you pull a fast one on me, didn't I? I have a lot of fun, Ken, because you're going to be a dead duck in about 2 minutes.
Annie Joyce, the confidence gal. How long did they keep you in stir?
1 year and 2 months.
Yep. You've come a long way in the last 8 years, baby. From swindling to murder. Well, now wait a minute. You don't have to be so impatient.
This gun doesn't shoot. It seems to catch on.
It's all right with me if it doesn't shoot at all. Tell me, how did you get Baldwin to turn his back for the knife?
I didn't. He was kissing me when I killed him.
Oh, you're just the woman for me.
Phillips had gone out with a loaded suitcase, and Mark and I were going to wait until he'd been arrested and sent to jail, and then...
You were going to split $500,000.
That's right.
But you decided why wait and why split.
I'm selfish that way.
Yeah, but you're going to wait, Cookie, for a quick burn.
Well, you won't be around to see it.
I'm not so sure of that, miss.
No!
Drop that gun.
She doesn't have to, Inspector. It just changed hands. Well... Did I do all right, Inspector?
For once in your life, when you came in here, I was afraid you was going to close that door with a snap lock on it.
Inspector, you don't think much of me, do you?
You want the truth.
No, just skip it.
Imagine hiding those securities under a rug.
Yeah, and such a nice rug, too.
$500,000 worth in her apartment.
And me stepping on it all the time.
Ken.
Yes, dear?
How well did you know her?
Doris, I told you. I saw her in a courtroom 8 years ago.
And you remembered her for so long?
I've got a weakness for redheads.
I'm not a redhead.
Oh, that can be remedied.
Would it make you happy?
All over.
Oh.
Hey, take it easy. Your father's asleep on that chair. Suppose he wakes up and...
And?
Well, suppose he does.
Dad won't mind. Will you?
Well...
Well, will you?
Oh, but Dad.
I can't wait all night, Doris. I've got to go to bed.
And so closes tonight's story, Cowhide. Stedman Coles wrote the radio script. Roger Bauer produced and directed. Bill Quinn played Ken Badger. Joan Tompkins was Doris Phillips. Cameron Prudhomme was Harold Phillips. Eleanor Phelps played Joyce Lipton, Joe Latham was Inspector Hopkins, and Murray Forbes was Walter Conrad. Oh, I beg your pardon. Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Yes, this is the Crime Club. I'm the librarian. Yes, come over a week from tonight. Good. We have the very intriguing story of a decision that almost cost a man's life. It's called Sentence of Death. In the meantime, there's a new Crime Club book available this week and every week at bookstores everywhere. Yes, it's available now. Fine. And we look for you next week. Oh, yes. And another thing. Traffic accidents have been increasing at an alarming rate. Avoid them by respecting the rights of your neighbor on the road and by being sure that you and the car you are driving are in good condition.
This program came from New York. Stay tuned now for another mutual favorite. Quiet Please follows in just a moment. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
It never pays to be friendly with murderers. Give them an inch and they'll take a yard, usually rope, tied around your throat and attached to the nearest rafter.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Craig speaking. If I try hard, I can remember back to the days before I was in this business, when on going to bed at night, I would always look under my bed. No, not for a blonde, a burglar. There never was one, though. So as the years went by, I stopped looking. I just went to bed. On this particular night, however, I had barely dropped off to sleep when I heard a noise at my window. I was practically asleep, and besides, I wasn't in the mood for burglars. The burglar, however, had other ideas.
Mr. Craig.
I'm asleep.
You can't see me, can you?
No, and I'd be happier if I couldn't hear you.
I can see you, however. It helps me aim the gun I'm pointing at you more accurately.
Well, I'd hate to have your aim suffer.
Mr. Craig, I need some advice. I'm a novelist. I'm writing a book about murder. I'm calling it The Unsolvable Crime.
Well, now that you've got that off your chest...
What I came here for was to have you tell me whether or not the murder my book is about is really unsolvable.
Well, why me?
Because you've had a lot to do with murder, for one thing. Because you're not a policeman, for another.
No argument so far.
The man to be murdered, in my book, that is, has heart disease. He's a crooked broker, a man who deserves to die.
Uh-huh. And he suffers from heart disease.
For this illness, he takes daily, at stated hours, capsules containing heart medicine. His life depends on these capsules. Now then, the murderer, in my book, that is, decides to poison the broker.
Well, that's against the law.
Yes. Poisoning, but without poison.
Well, get to the next chapter.
The murderer steals one of the capsules, pours the medicine out, and replaces the medicine with ordinary water. Eventually, the financier takes the capsule, which contains water instead of medicine. He dies of heart failure.
Well, not bad.
Thank you. The poisoner can't be traced through the poison he bought because he didn't buy any. An autopsy would show no poison in his victim's body since there wouldn't be any. Most likely, the murdered man would be assumed to have died a natural death. Well?
Well, what?
Is the crime unsolvable?
Oh, at the moment, I can't see any flaws in it.
Well, if you can't, then I don't imagine the book reviewers will.
Don't you mean the police?
Why should the police be interested in a book I'm writing?
Why should the book reviewers be interested in the murder you're committing?
You're not serious.
You are.
Well, I'm afraid I must leave now. No, no, don't move. I still have the gun pointing at you. If I had to shoot you, it wouldn't be an unsolvable crime, perhaps. But what good would that do you? Good night, Mr. Craig. Pleasant dream.
The gentleman in the dark left quickly and efficiently, so I went back to sleep. When I got up the next morning, I decided to pretend the whole thing hadn't happened. There was nothing I could do, and maybe my midnight visitor had really been a novelist. I cherished that happy thought until breakfast.
Your toast, Mr. Craig, in the morning paper.
Thank you.
Well, you're up early this morning, aren't you?
Well, I'm glad you noticed. Any resemblance between this toast and toast is purely coincidental. What does your chef do? Tan the stuff? Hey.
I beg your pardon?
Very interesting news item here. Halfway down the front page. Take a look.
James W. Baker, noted broker, dies of heart attack as police prepare to arrest him for embezzlement. A friend of yours?
No, but he was a crooked broker and he had a bad heart.
Well, is that important, Mr. Craig?
It depends on whether he took his medicine in capsules.
What depends, sir?
Murder. Sure, maybe it was a coincidence. But if it was, it was the kind of coincidence that goes better in books than in reality. James W. Baker was listed in the phone book, so feeling that maybe the long arm of coincidence had strained a muscle in this particular case, I decided to pay the late Mr. Baker a friendly visit.
Hello.
Hello. This is the Baker home, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I'm Mr. Baker's niece. And you?
Barry Craig. I'm an old friend of your uncle's.
You're not old.
Well...
And you're not a friend of my uncle's. But come in anyway.
Thank you.
My name is Sandra.
I realize maybe I shouldn't have come today. You must be all broken up by your uncle's death.
Who, me?
Well, the family.
Well, that's me. I'm the family.
Your uncle must have been a lonely man.
He didn't mind. He had me. And the market. And all those people. He was swindling, of course. And there were Mr. Hansen and Tommy.
Who's Tommy?
Oh, sort of stunted youth. Uncle's secretary. Very anemic. I always ignore him.
And Hansen?
Hansen was Uncle's lawyer. And I fondly suspect as big a crook as Uncle was. But very spatted, you know?
Spatted?
Yes, on the shoes and gardenia'd in the buttonhole. And I have a sneaking suspicion whiskied in the liver.
Hmm, sounds nice. Anybody else close to Uncle?
No.
Then it boils down to one of you three.
What does?
Who's happy now that Uncle's dead?
Well, I am. Hansen is. Tommy is.
Well, it just about covers the field. Well, why is everybody so happy?
Uncle had some money. I get it now. Hansen stole from Uncle, and he won't go to jail now. Tommy was implicated in Uncle's swindling. Tommy won't go to jail now.
And who has a very deep, rasping voice, with the trick of dropping his voice at the end of every sentence?
I don't have a very deep voice.
Are Hansen and Tommy around?
Yes, they are. They're sitting around, practicing grief-stricken looks for the funeral. That happy event is this afternoon. I better get dressed.
Sandra.
Hurry.
No, who's hurrying?
I am. Who are you?
Barry Craig. And you?
Well, I'm Tommy. I'm Mr. Baker's secretary.
Well, in his condition, he doesn't need a secretary.
Well, then, I'm Mr. Baker's former secretary. No, I'm the former Mr. Baker's secretary. No,
I get it. Relax.
I am relaxed.
Then why are you in such a hurry?
Well, I have to go out to hire some mourners, haven't I?
You have to hire some mourners?
Well, sure. It wouldn't look nice if there were only three of us at the funeral.
No. Especially since you'll all be grinning from ear to ear. Incidentally, has your voice ever been deeper?
Heavens, no. Ta-ta.
Goodbye. Oh, back again? Oh, no. Hello?
Good morning. I'm in a hurry. Hansen's my name.
Oh, why are you in such a hurry?
Well, you see, my tailor is expecting me.
Your tailor?
Well, you'd hardly expect me to attend Mr. Baker's funeral in this, would you?
Impossible.
What are you doing here?
Looking for a man with a deep voice.
Sorry, mine isn't. Goodbye. Why are you looking for a man with a deep voice?
Well, he told me how Mr. Baker was going to be murdered.
Well, of course, that explains everything. What did you say?
That's what I said.
But Mr. Baker died of heart failure.
Well, that's another theory. I like mine better.
Dear me. If I only had the time, but my tailor, you know. Goodbye.
I stayed in my chair for a while, staring at the door that had shut behind Hansen. Wondering. I'd been handed my three suspects. There was something else, though, that might help, it occurred to me, in a bookstore. And I chose a bookstore in the same neighborhood as Baker's house.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hello. Do you carry medical books?
Why, yes, we do.
Would you happen to have one on the diseases of the heart?
Well, now, we don't stock many. We had one, but we sold it last week.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'm sorry. No, it's funny. The person I sold it to was a very nervous gentleman. I rather suspected at the time that he might have a heart condition himself.
I see. Do you recall his name?
Name? Oh, yes. Yes, I remember. It was Hansen. That's right, Hansen.
Mr. Hansen's taste in literature was interesting. It occurred to me Mr. Hansen himself, if I could pin him down, might be more interesting still. Hello, Mr. Hansen.
Oh, Mr. Craig. Come in.
Thank you. Well, how did the funeral go this afternoon?
Very sad. Very sad indeed. Funerals upset me.
Yeah, I can see how that would be. Have you ever tried reading for your nerves? It's supposed to be very soothing.
Oh, I'm afraid I have no patience for books.
Not even books on heart disease?
What was that? Why, I... Excuse me. Hello? Oh, yes. Yes, of course. At once. Goodbye.
Bad news? You turn pale.
I'm terribly shocked. Tommy, you know him?
Baker's secretary? Yes, I know him.
Well, it seems that something's happened to him.
What?
He's dead.
This not only upset Hansen, it set him in motion. The direction was the Baker house. I approved and went along. Hansen, who phoned you?
Sandra. Apparently, she'd been visiting friends, returned home, and found him.
Of course, it might have been an accidental death, which would mean another point for coincidence, but I don't think so. However, if he was murdered...
You seem to have murder on your brain. You said something about the police thinking Baker was murdered, too.
Not the police. Me.
Oh, hello.
Hello, Miss Sander. Have you notified the police?
Yes, I phoned them just a few minutes ago. This is his room. I heard the shots.
But when?
About an hour ago.
You phoned Hansen here only 15 minutes ago.
Well, I didn't know what it was then. Tommy was going to join me downstairs. When he didn't, I realized it must have been a shot. There he is.
Yes. Not at all pretty. Definitely dead. There's a note on his desk.
A suicide note?
See. Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be. It reads, I killed Baker because if he'd been arrested, I would have gone to jail too. I thought I got away with it, but the police suspect he was murdered. I can't take it, so excuse the blood. The note's signed Tommy.
Wow. That sort of clears that up, doesn't it?
Yeah, except for one thing.
What's that?
Tommy's voice wasn't deep enough. The police showed up in a very little while. Tommy's death seemed to be an obvious suicide. I think the police attributed it to insanity. They didn't know what he meant about Baker's having been murdered. As for me, there didn't seem to be much of anything to do at the moment, so I went home and went to bed. This, it would appear, was going to be a case where I didn't sleep. I resisted the impulse to throw the phone out the nearest window and answered it. I'm asleep, and so should you be.
Craig?
Now that you know I'm at home, good night.
Wait a minute. Craig, you told Sandra about someone who came to you in the middle of the night and told you about Baker's murder.
Yes, I did.
You described that voice very carefully. Craig, would you like to hear it again?
Very much.
Then come down here at once. The Kent Club on Marshall Boulevard, and I can arrange it for you. The man with the voice you described is here.
I'd pretty much given up expecting to hear that voice again. But if Hansen said he'd heard it, then it was something for me to find out about. From the time I got the phone call to the time I got to the club, it must have been about a half an hour.
Craig, I've been waiting for you.
That was the idea, wasn't it?
Yes, but that man whose voice I overheard, whose voice resembled the one you told Sandra about.
Well?
He's gone.
Well, that's not so good. You know who the man is?
No, but I do know something just as good.
What's that?
I know where the man went. I heard him tell his cab driver.
Then let's go there.
course, Craig, you realize that I'm not absolutely sure it's the man you want.
Me? I'm grabbing at straws. Anything at the moment is worth trying.
That voice did sound like your description. Baker belonged to the club, too.
It's a possibility. Hanson, Sandra told me you'd been stealing money from Baker.
I don't think I care for that kind of conversation.
I'm not making conversation. I'm asking questions. Was she telling the truth?
What difference does it make?
If Baker was murdered, it might make a lot of difference.
You say if Baker was murdered. Aren't you sure?
We'll know better, won't we, when we meet this man whose voice you overheard.
Yes, we'll know better. The only thing is, suppose something happens to him?
Hey, are we still in the United States? We've been traveling for hours.
Apparently he lives farther out than we realized. Shouldn't be much farther. Craig, mind if I ask you something?
Go ahead.
It's about Tommy. I can see him committing suicide, all right. He never impressed me as being much of anything. But somehow I can't see him murdering Baker.
People rarely kill other people in front of witnesses.
That's not what I meant. Craig, are you sure Baker was murdered?
No.
But you said before...
I said I suspected it. That's something else. However, I am sure of one thing.
What's that?
I'm sure Tommy...
Yes?
...was murdered. I was never a Boy Scout, so I don't know very much about direction in the country. But I was surprised at where I wound up. Where the car wound up was a bumpy dirt road in a very secluded hunk of landscape.
Well, that must be the house up ahead.
Yes, and the house is dark.
Probably took him less time to get here. Must have gone to bed.
Probably.
There's a mailbox. House number on it. Yes, this is it.
Well, let's go visit.
Craig, do you think he'll recognize you?
Sure. I couldn't see him, but he saw me clearly enough.
Well, that's not so good. Are you armed, in case he tries anything?
No. But maybe he won't try anything.
Suppose he refuses to say anything, to speak at all, when he sees you.
That'll answer our question just as well, won't it?
I suppose so. Shall I ring?
Sure.
Well, that would be warning him, though, wouldn't it? Suppose he hears the doorbell, looks out, sees you. He might run away.
He might.
Look, why don't I go around to the back? Then in case he tries to run...
That's a good idea. You do that.
All right. And be careful.
Sure, I'll be very careful. The moon picked out the door, glinted on the metal doorbell. I pushed it. It was a nice night, not too warm, not too cold. However, a guy named Craig was cold. Walking into a dark house with somebody waiting on the other side of a door could have its unpleasant aspects. Nobody answered the doorbell. I hadn't expected anyone to, so I tried the handle. It was very dark inside. I pulled out a book of matches and hesitated. In the darkness, when you strike a match, you make a very nice target. I wasn't sure I liked the idea. On the other hand, I needed a little more action. It would settle things. I lit a match. There was a light switch on the wall, and I flipped it on. Then I walked into the parlor. There wasn't much more to the house than that. Parlor, bedroom, kitchen, and that was all. The bedroom door was open, and no one was in there. The kitchen door was shut, but no light leaked out from under the door. Offhand, you'd have said nobody was home. And maybe nobody was. So I sat down near the table lamp that was the room's only illumination. Somebody made noises in the kitchen. Could have been mice. It could have been the mystery man with the deep voice, or it could have been a high wind that was slowly swinging the kitchen door open. I decided, whatever it was, that I didn't want the lamp to glare in its eyes, so I turned off the lamp and quietly shifted from my position next to the lamp to the other side of the room. That even matters up. It was dark in the kitchen, it was dark in the parlor, and nobody could see anybody. My unlit friend shifted slightly, and I began to get bored. So I grabbed what felt like an ashtray and threw it against the wall on the opposite side of the room. The little stranger didn't like ashtrays. He tried to shoot the one I threw, but the gun flash gave his position away. I know where you are, and my gun's pointing at where you are, so drop yours. It didn't work. I hadn't expected it to, which is why I moved fast after speaking. I figured he still had three more bullets, any one of which hitting me could be painful, so... Drop the pop gun, huh?
All right.
Thanks. We can use a little electricity now. Hello, Hanson.
Craig.
My, you're bleeding. Your arm?
Yes, I didn't know it was you.
Who'd you think it was?
Well, I waited outside for a while. Nothing happened, so I came in.
And then when you didn't recognize my voice in the dark, you started shooting at me, huh?
That's right.
Thinking I was the owner of this house?
Of course.
But, Hanson, how could you think that when you yourself own this house?
What? But I don't understand.
You're not very subtle. When you asked me if I was armed before we got into the house...
You said you weren't.
Of course. You see, I knew you were going to try to kill me.
What? How did you know that?
Because you overheard the man with the deep voice.
Well, what was wrong with that?
You couldn't have heard him. You see, Hanson, the man with the deep voice is dead. The police were glad to get Hanson, especially after I pointed out to them that Tommy's suicide note was a fake. They couldn't have known that, but I did. As I told Sandra, first about the note. You see, it said, the police suspect Baker was murdered. But the police suspected nothing of the sort.
You did, though.
Yes, but the only one I told was Hanson. And Hanson himself assured me he never spoke to Tommy. Therefore...
Hanson killed Tommy after making him write the note?
Right.
But, Barry, what about the man who spoke to you in the middle of the night? He wasn't Hanson.
No.
Well, he couldn't have been Tommy.
No.
Well, then who was he?
Sandra, there were three people involved in Baker's possible murder, we thought. You, Hanson, and Tommy.
That's so.
Well, we were wrong. There were four people involved.
Four? Who's the fourth?
The murderer. Baker himself.
Oh.
Then we ask, why did the man come to me in the first place?
Well, he said to make sure his method of murdering somebody would never be detected.
Yeah, that's what he said. But in coming to me, didn't he make sure of the very opposite? Wasn't he making sure that it would be detected?
Oh, Barry, you're very, very brilliant.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, Baker knew he was going to jail. He also knew that very probably Hanson would try to murder him. He didn't care very much. He was an old man and a sick one, but he did want to make sure his murderer would be punished. That's funny.
What is?
If Hanson hadn't tried to make doubly sure he was safe, he probably would be safe. I doubt whether there'd have been enough evidence to convict him of your uncle's murder. But he'll hang for Tommy.
You've been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Visitor at Midnight, was written by Louis Vittes. The National Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator, directed by Andrew C. Love. Our cast included Ken Christie, Kay Stewart, Jack Carroll, Byron Kane, and Jack Crucian. Convicts tell their true life stories on The Loser tonight over most NBC radio stations.